We'll tell them that if they don't cooperate, we'll shoot up their village for keeps.
Probably, said Johnny. He looked at Turl with disgust and laughed. It stung Turl. Johnny was sitting back now, looking at the map. Johnny saw that they were avoiding a mine site located in the southwest of England. He wagered with himself that Turl would come down to Wavetop in the last run into Scotland.
Why won't it work? Demanded Turl.
If I've got to train them, you better let me walk in and get them. Turl barked a laugh.
Animal, if you walked into that village, they would drill you like a sieve. Suicide! What a rat brain!
If you want any help from me, said Johnny, offering the map, you'll land up here on this mountain and let me walk in the last 5 miles.
And then what will you do?
Johnny did not want to tell him. I'll get you 50 men. With a shake of his head, Turl said,
Too risky. I didn't spend over a year training you just to have to start all over.
Then he realized he might have said too much. He looked suspiciously at Johnny, thinking,
The animal must not consider itself valuable. Crap, said Turl. All right, animal. You can go ahead and get yourself killed. What's one animal more or less? Where's the mountain?
Well short of northern Scotland, Turl brought the personnel freighter down to Wavetop. They skimmed the gray-green water, eventually roared up the side of a cliff, shot inland, battering the scrub and trees, and came to a halt under the shoulder of a mountain. Johnny won his own bet. Turl had avoided the mine site in the south. 8. Johnny stepped down into a different land. The barren mountain and its scrub seemed to swim in a soft mist. Everything was hazed and faintly blue. It seemed a very beautiful place, but it had dark gorges and inaccessible summits, and there was a secretness about it, as though its softness concealed a harsh threat. He had not realized a land could be so different from the bold mountains of his home. He had changed to buckskin. He hung a kill club on his belt.
It's over there about 5 miles, said Turl, pointing south. Very rough terrain. Don't get any ideas about vanishing. There's a whole ocean and continent between you and your country. You'd never make it back.
He took out the control box and laid it on the seat behind him. He pointed at it. Could be, said Johnny, that by tomorrow morning I'll come back and get you to move into the village. So don't move off.
Tomorrow noon, said Turl, I'll come down and collect 50 men my way. If you're still alive, duck under something to avoid the stun guns, damned fool.
See you tomorrow morning, said Johnny, moving off.
Goodbye, rat brain, said Turl.
Johnny found a faint trail that went south, and alternately running and walking, wove his way through the gullies and brush and barren fields. It was not a very promising land for food. He did not start any deer, but he saw an old trace of one. There was not much grazing to be had. Far off on another mountain, he thought he saw some sheep, just a few of them, more like a small cloud than animals. He caught a glimpse of water through the scrub ahead, and went up a gully, intending to get a better look. Yes, there was an inland body of water ahead. He trotted back to the trail. Abruptly, 3 pointed stakes jabbed out of cover. He stopped. Very, very slowly, he put up his hands, palms out to show they were empty of weapons. A guttural, wheezing voice said,
Take his club. Be swift now.
One spear lowered, and a heavy-set youth with a black beard stepped forward, and a bit fearfully yanked the club from Johnny's belt. The youth retreated around behind him and pushed him. The other spears made way.
Look saucy now, the wheezing voice said. Dunna let him run away.
They came to a small clearing, and Johnny looked at them. There were 4, 2 with black hair and dark eyes, a third with blonde hair and blue eyes, and taller than the rest, plus an old man who seemed to be in charge. Their dress was partly woven cloth and partly hides. They wore patterned skirts of some rough fabric that fell to their knees. On their heads they had bonnets.
"It's a thief from the Orkneys," said one.
"Nah, I ken Orkneymen," said another.
"Could be he's a Swede," said the blonde one. "But no Swede dresses so."
"Hush your prattle," said the old one.
"Look in his pouch, and mayhap you'll find the answer."
Johnny laughed. "I can give you the answer," he said. They recoiled on the defensive. Then a black-haired one crept forward and looked closely into his face.
"He's a Sassenach. Hear the accent."
The old man brushed the speaker aside with impatience.
"Nah, the Sassenachs be dead these many centuries, except for those already here."
"Let's go down to the village," said Johnny. "I'm a messenger."
"Ah," said the black-bearded one.
"Clan Argyle. They want to talk of peace."
"No, no, no," said the old man. "He wears no such plaid."
He squared himself off in front of Johnny.
"Messenger ye be from whom?"
"You'll fall over on your backside," laughed Johnny, "when I tell you. So let's go down to the village. My message is for your parson or mayor."
"Ah, it's a parson we have. But you'll be meaning chief of the clan, Fergus. Get behind him, you boys, and push him along."
9. The village sprawled on the shore of what they said was Loch Shin. It looked temporary, as though the inhabitants could easily pick up belongings and flee to a mountainside. A great many racks stood about with fish drying on them. A few children peeked, afraid, from behind fallen walls. No vast number of people came out to watch the group enter the village, but there was a feeling of eyes watching. Here, too, the mist softened the land. The waters of the loch lay placid and extensive in the quiet day. They put Johnny in the front chamber of the only whole stone house apparent. It had an inner room, and the old man went in. There was considerable murmuring of voices from in there as Johnny waited. A scrawny child peeked at him from behind a tattered cloth curtain, its blue eyes intense. He put out a hand toward it to beckon it closer, and it vanished in a flurry of curtain. There was evidently a back door, and Johnny heard it open and close several times. The murmuring in the inner room intensified. More people were coming into it from the back. At length, the old man came to Johnny.
"He'll see you now,"
he said, and pointed to the inner chamber. Johnny went in. About 8 men had assembled and taken seats along the walls. They had spears and clubs beside them or in their hands. Seated on a large chair against the back wall was a big black-haired, black-bearded power of a man. He had a short skirt that showed the bony knees of strong legs. He wore a pair of white cross belts, pinned together at the center of the X with a large silver badge. A bonnet sat squarely on his head, and he held a large ancient sword across his knees. Johnny knew he must be looking at Chief of the Clan Fergus. Fergus looked about at his council to see that they were all there and alert. He stared at the newcomer.
"A messenger," said Fergus. "From whom?"
"Have you had any trouble with the monsters?" said Johnny. A shock went through the group.
"I take it you mean the demons," said Fergus.
"Would you mind telling me any trouble you have had?" said Johnny. This threw them into an uproar. Fergus held up an imperious hand. Quiet fell.
"Young man," said Fergus, "since you give us no name, as you claim to be a messenger, although you have not said from whom, though I suppose you will tell us in good time, I will do you the courtesy of answering your question."
Johnny was getting the notes of the accent and followed easily. The chief talked in his throat and clipped off the words.
"Since the days of the myths," said Fergus, "we have had nothing but trouble from the demons. The myths tell us they raised a cloud across the land and all peoples died except a very few. I'm sure you know these myths, since they are religious, and you appear to be a properly, politely religious man."
All to the south of us, no man dare live. There is a fortress of the demons 500 miles to the south and west, and from time to time they foray out and hunt men. They kill them without reason or compunction. At this moment, you find us in the fishing village, for the fish are running. We sit here and work at risk. As soon as we have a little food, we will retire further into the highlands. We have always been a proud people, we of the Clan Fergus. But no one can fight the demons. Now that I have answered you, please continue.
I am here, said Johnny, to recruit 50 young, valiant men. They will be taught certain skills and will perform certain tasks. It will be dangerous. Many of them may die. But in the end, should God grant us fortune, and we are true to our task, we may defeat the demons and drive them from this world. It caused an explosion. The council had withdrawn into themselves at their chief's recitation of ancient history, and they had been made fearful. But the idea of someone combating the demons was so outrageous they exploded. Johnny sat quietly until the chief thumped the chair arm with his sword hilt. The chief looked at a council member.
You wish to speak, Angus? Aye, that is another myth, that once long ago, when Scots were thousands, a great crusade went south, and they were crushed.
That was before the demons,
shouted another council member.
Nobody has ever fought the demons, yelled another.
A grizzled council member stood forward, and the chief recognized him as Robert the Fox.
I do not deny, he said, that it would be a worthy cause. We starve in the highlands. There is little grazing for sheep. We dare not plow and plant crops as our ancestors once did in these rocky glens, for the myths tell us demons fly through the air and have eyes, and some say that the strange metal cylinder that passes overhead on some days is itself a demon. But I also tell you, he continued, that this stranger, clothed in what I take to be buckskin, signifying a hunter, speaking a strangely accented speech, smiling and courteous, and no Argyle, has voiced an idea that in all my long life I have never heard before. His words cause the mind to flare with sudden vision. That he can propose such a vision of daring and boldness proves that in some way he must be a Scot. I recommend we listen.
He sat down. Fergus was musing. We could not let all our young men go. Some would have to be from the Campbells, some from the Glen Cannons. But never mind. Stranger, you have not told us either your name or from whom you are a messenger. Johnny braced himself. I am Johnny Goodboy Tyler. I am from America. There was chatter. Then Robert the Fox said,
Legends say it was a land of the ancients where many Scots went.
Then he is a Scot,
said another council member. The chief held up his hand to quiet them.
That doesn't tell us from whom you are a messenger.
Johnny looked calm. He didn't feel calm. I am a messenger from mankind, before we become extinct forever. He saw a flicker of awe in some, a flicker of wonder in others. The chief leaned forward again.
But how did you get here?
I flew here. The chief and the others digested this. The chief frowned then.
In these times, only the demons can fly. How did you get here from America?
I own a demon, said Johnny.